We know this name very well. I don't know what you know the best. Would it be John Ellis or Tree 63? John Ellis doing the talking. Hello, John. How are you?
Hi, Janine. It's so great to hear your voice again.
Yeah. Good things. Always welcome.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
Okay, let's catch up with you. Firstly, before we get into Tree 63 and the music and everything that's happened, blah, blah, blah. John Ellis these days, who are you?
Ah, I am a proud Cape Townian now after having moved to Cape Town in 2022.
Oh, wow.
And although I miss my hometown, I'm very happy to be in the Cape. And I am a father of three children. I'm a singer-songwriter. I'm a writer. I'm presently pursuing a PhD in English literature. And there's a lot going on in my life.
What? Why? Yeah. Why are you pursuing a PhD in English Lit now?
Well, because at heart, I'm a writer and a reader. And I did a master's degree in 2021, and my professor just said, well, why don't you keep going? And I don't need a PhD, but I'm using it as an excuse to write a book, which I'm really enjoying.
And then you're going to be Dr. John Ellis.
One day.
Most. That sounds very impressive and all. Let's not assume people know the origins of Tree 63, which didn't start off as Tree 63 in 1996. In case they've forgotten, tell the story.
Tree 63 was a little bit of an accident. I became a Christian in 1996, and I was pursuing music all those years before that. And then when I met God, I felt this urge to not have to pursue music anymore. But I still kept on writing songs. I wrote songs about my new relationship with this new God I had heard so much about. And then I felt this call to do something else. So I recorded the first Tree 63 album in the early 97. And then we broke up. And the plan was for me to become a monk.
Okay.
And all these years later, here we are talking about Tree 63. So obviously God had other plans, you know.
And what happened to the other members? Because the Tree 63 in 2025 is not the Tree 63 of 1996.
No. So after 96, 97, 98, we ended up in Europe and then in America, and we were based in Nashville for many years. Daryl Swart, original drummer, married a Canadian, and he's in Canada freezing, very, very cold. And Daniel Ornelas, the bass player, is stayed in Nashville all these years. So when it came time for me to, a couple of years ago, to look at Tree 63 again, I needed to think about playing with new members. And that's what's happened.
And who are they?
On drums, there's Angus Warden, a very well-known drummer in Cape Town. And then on bass is somebody who plays with Majorzy once in a while. His name is Dion Knipe. So we have an Afrikaans member of the band and an English Cape Townian.
Yeah, that keeps life interesting. And performances, are you busy? Are you getting out there again, or is it slow going?
Yeah, it is slow going. The music industry that exists now is not what it was at all in 1997. Things have changed so radically. It's very, very hard to find opportunities to play live. I know most bands I talk to, Christian or secular, are all struggling with the same thing. There are less and less opportunities to perform live and to make a living out of it. So it's a very difficult space to be in, but we trust God.
Why? Why is it so hard? Did the venues close down, or what happened?
Well, it's mostly an economic thing, and also the internet has changed the way we consume music. So, for example, you can no longer make music, make money selling your music.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's streamed now. So now, for example, we'll take some time to make an album, which effectively is a great business card. And then you use the album to hopefully inspire people to come and see you play. But people are struggling. It's tough out there. Everyone around the world, on any level, in any country, things are economically difficult, and money music is a bit of a thing where, like, almost like a luxury, where if you can afford to go out and see a band, you will, but it's not cheap anymore. And so people tend to prioritize other things. So it's hard to get people to convince people to come and see you play, and venues close down because people aren't attending. So it's a bit of a cyclical thing, you know.
And I understand that you've got to have, like, another job to fund your passion for making music. I was speaking to Pete Smith from Amonokal,
yes.
And he was explaining to me that you cannot recoup your money, that it costs you to make music. You have to make other money to support this.
It's ridiculous. I mean, there was a, but it, yeah, it is hard, but only because someone like me who's experienced both worlds knows the difference. If you're a young person starting out now, this is your normal.
Yeah.
And you have three or four jobs to support your passion. But for someone like me who had a previous career where it was just music, it's quite an interesting thing to try and transition and balance being a person of responsibility with children and a home and all those things, and still pursue your passion for just creating and being creative.
I was also interested to see your podcast in 2024. Yes. Already, you were talking about AI. I mean, 10 years ago, you didn't compete against AI for airspace, no. You know, for people's phones and whatever. To me, it was so interesting. Already a year ago, you were saying, you compare.
Well, in 2023, I was still lecturing at Varsity College in Cape Town. And I was lecturing during the month when ChatGPT-4 was launched. And I saw the students' reaction to it. Immediately, they realized they could use AI to complete their assignments. So I saw an immediate impact in my own working life. And then from then on, it got worse when people started telling me about how AI could now impersonate songwriting and recording. It's a year later, and it's much more impressive. AI is a very impressive tool. But it definitely does impact the ability of musicians to make original music, you know.
The thing is, John, nobody sounds like you. I mean, they can say, AI, please make me sound like John Ellis, and then make a song. But that thing, that uniqueness, when I think about specific artists and you know what they sound like, AI, yeah. When you say, play me a rock song, they've got their rock voice. When they say, play me a ballad song, there's this, it's an awesome voice. But it's what AI has decided sounded good. There definitely is something human about humans making music.
It's irrefutable, and I think human nature will balance itself out, and we'll retain our love for authentic, organic human music. But you can't deny that what Suno does for the average person who is not a musician. It feels like magic. It feels like something very impressive, and it's exciting to play with tools and make your own music, and it feels like it's you. I think in time humans will level out, relax, and realize it's not real, because all AI is doing is faking it.
Yeah.
There's nothing authentic about it at all. And I think we'll, like all things, we will eventually grow tired of it and turn to it for other things.
Okay, but other people didn't read that blog. So I wanted you to tell them, what does it take you, especially the harder songs that you've created, now, that whole process, for them to understand 3.5 seconds of AI versus this is what real people do?
Well, songwriting is like a craft, like woodworking. You take a piece of wood and a chisel or a hammer or a saw, and you sit in a one knife, you know, and you sit and you work at that wood and you draw something creative out of that piece of wood over time. It takes time and attention, skill, expertise, detail. That's what it's like with a song. I sit under a tree with a guitar and sit and play and doodle, and slowly but surely a piece emerges, a song emerges, some art emerges that's worth remembering and working on and putting words to. It takes time. Sometimes things arrive very quickly. But usually it's work. And I think that's one of the things that technology is about, is finding ways to get around having to work at things. We want instant results. But songwriting is not an instant result. It usually is something you craft over time. And I think that's what the appeal of AI is finding ways to get around having to work at it. But if you want something really worth keeping and remembering and coming back to over the rest of your life, you need to have something that has been worked on very deeply and carefully by somebody who knows what they're doing.
And it's not only the craft and the science behind making a good song sound good. Now, there's life lived behind that conviction that you're singing
Absolutely.
About. There's mistakes made and tears mm-hmm. and sweat and all of that. It's just not there.
Well, I think that's what people always will be able to tell. When you hear a song written and crafted by a human, it's been inspired by something or someone or by God, you will hear the difference. You can hear a very quick result in AI, and it's very impressive, but there's no depth. Depth comes from struggle and cutting yourself with a knife and bleeding and repairing yourself and going back again and learning how to not to do it the next time. And all the struggle that comes with learning your craft, you know?
Yeah, that's the truth. Talking about cutting yourself and bleeding and all of that, I mean, you have been through life's ringer. Forget now the music industry ringer, your own yes. life and personal life and all of that. And there is the danger of yes. the discontent, the disillusionment, the cynicism taking over, that becomes standard in your life, your default setting in life, that you look yes. at life through glasses of brokenness. But yes. that gets you to a place of discontentment. That sucks, huh? I mean, yes. It's tiring Absolutely. To always be at the weariness of it.
Of course. But it turns out, if you hang in long enough, that even discontent and disillusion are the tools God uses in our lives to bring Him closer to us and bring us closer to Him. So, it's actually a gift. Julian of Norwich is from the medieval times, and she said something that's resonated with me over so many years. First we fall, then we recover from the fall, and both are the mercy of God. Mm. I just love that, because we try to avoid falling.
Yeah.
We just want the recovery, but we have to fall first. That's the same concept as we love the process of resurrection, but there's crucifixion first. And if we can endure the pain of crucifixion and pain and suffering, we find mercy on the other side. We have to accept that both of those are at the hands of God, and they're both beautiful things in their own way. And if we hang it long enough, we will find always, always grace and mercy on the other side of suffering.
We had this whole discussion about God's sovereignty. And I've been going through, as I've been reading the Bible, finding all the many, many scriptures where God is the instigator, where He's the yes. one bringing the suffering. He doesn't yes. stop it. It's Him that yes. does it. And then when you have that kind of discussion with charismatic Christians, they get offended because they want to put Satan in the bad cop box and God in the good cop box. And therefore, now suddenly Satan wins around and then God wins around. And it's like this war where they're equally matched, where you've got the same scriptures that says, count it all joy when you encounter yes. that suffering. But yes. doesn't it do something for your heart when you've gone through this and you realize that a loving God never left yes. you? He didn't not love you because He took you through it.
No, exactly. And in fact, He takes us through it because He loves us. He knows that the only way we can change and grow better and stronger is through the suffering of change and the change of suffering. It's suffering is the key to growth, knowledge, wisdom, all those things. And He knows that, like a good parent, you know. I remember we used to get so much criticism in America for the song Blessed Be Your Name, which we didn't even write. It's written by my friend Matt Redden. But the line of the song that people were offended by, Americans were offended by, was He gives and takes away. They wanted us
which
to change
is Job.
That. It's Job. Yeah. It's in the book of Job. And the point of that verse is not that He takes away and gives, that it's blessed be the name of the Lord regardless of the circumstances. That's the message, right? But there are Christians who would prefer not to face that reality and just want it to be perfect all the time, which is absolutely impossible. There's no growth in perfection. There's only growth in imperfection, change, and disorder, and all those really hard things we struggle and wrestle with, because when we struggle and wrestle, we grow stronger and wiser, right?
But I want to ask you, so in it, while you were broken and disillusioned and all of that, was there a break of trust between you and God that had to be restored?
I don't know about break of trust, but I think what happens is we are faced with our illusions of God and our understanding of God to the point where they mostly break down when we are really struggling. And to the point where even like Jesus on the cross, we cry out, God, why have you forsaken me? Because our level of trust we feel is broken. We find that there's a new level of trust on the other side, but we don't know that until we've got almost gone through that cross experience of going, this feels like I've been completely abandoned. And then God goes, I will never abandon you. But we have to first experience that real sense of loss, and it's very, very painful. It's literally heartbreaking. But on the other side of it, and in the middle of it, there's God, and He somehow manages to reaffirm that He is still there, even when it feels very, very desolate.
And nobody can get to that conviction for you, huh? I mean, this, that thing needs to happen. You need the pigsty. You need to wrestle through that thing till you get to a place of peace.
Absolutely. And I think more than ever, now that I've experienced so much of this, God is on the side of those who feel like they are about to lose or have lost. Or God has got a special heart for those who feel like they can't go on anymore. There are certain things we go through where we feel absolutely at the last element of our strength. And I think God meets us there so deeply because he knows how frail we are as humans and how easy it is to give in to our weakness. He's really on our side on every level. That's very, very beautiful thing.
Just today, there was this guy who was speaking about the broken yes. That when you say yes to God originally, it's yes, absolutely. And it's like Peter, he says, yes, I'll fight for you. Yes, we'll do this. Yes, sure, Lord. And I'll never run away. And then he has to be totally disillusioned in himself and his successes till he gets to a place when he says yes the second time, he'll die for God. He does. I mean, he does. He dies. I'm looking at my own life and I'm recognizing that thing.
Of course.
We have to lose our shallowness in disillusionment.
Yes. But it's so hard because we cling on to that so tightly because we think that that's God. And it's, I think God understands that completely of what we're clinging to and gently prizes it from our grasp and says, you no longer need this. And we hang on to it so deeply and tightly. Like for me, also, for example, for my life was Tree 63. In 2007, I felt God saying, let go. And I was holding on to for dear life because it was all I worked for and all I thought God wanted from me. But it turns out there was much more on the other side. But he first had to get me to let go of it. It's very difficult when we think what we're doing for God is the thing that God wants us to do all the time.
Yeah. So have you learned the lesson now? Do you think you got it now or do you think you have to keep learning that one?
I think one thing I say more often in situations like these is the older I get, the less I know. So, for example, as a brand new believer, I would have learned things about God and through the Bible and gone, oh, I understand this now. I totally get this. I understand this. I get this. As we get older, we realize we know absolutely nothing, and everything we know is by the grace of God. And we get little glimpses through a glass darkly, right?
Yeah.
We get little glimpses, little clues, little breadcrumbs, and that's actually enough. The word is a lamp unto our feet, not a spotlight.
You know, when I just started out in the music industry in 1996, I had an interview. Well, I had to do a biography for Julius Magan. He's now with the Lord now. And I asked him, so I was at a horrible place where you know, you've been hurt by Christians. And I'm standing in front of him and I'm saying, you know what? So we've got to pray for people and now we've got to believe that they'll get healed and they don't. So what do you say? What do you say about all of these things that are supposed to be working in Christendom and doesn't work? And he says, I don't know. I don't know. And he was fine with what he didn't know. And it offended me. And then I'm thinking to myself, years later now, not knowing is that's normal. That's God, when he says his thoughts are higher, so much higher than our thoughts, it's actually true. He happens to be God in this.
Yes, and learning how to rest and not knowing is such a massive hill to climb.
Yeah.
Learning how to hold that uncertainty and the certainty in both hands. And be okay with that is the wisdom of getting older, I think. And that is crucial, and it's not learned easily.
Yeah, we'll get there. Well, in heaven, we have to get to heaven sometimes. We'll get that thing going. So why is the song called How Much Longer?
Wow, that is such a strong phrase that's repeated so often in the Psalms, and it's a lamentation of, God, we trust you, but how much longer must we wait for justice, mercy, goodness, kindness? We trust these things are coming, but sometimes it's harder to wait than others. You know? It's the cry of Israelites in the desert. How much longer must we wander? You know, the cry of the believer. How much longer until this arrives in my life or that arrives in my life? Or justice on the earth, or peace, or love, kindness, all these things that we spend our lives praying for. And most of the time we trust and we learn to trust and we learn to stay faithful and quiet. But once in a while that prayer escapes from our lips. God, how much longer? How much longer do we have to wait for these things? So it's a song that kind of stands in solidarity with people who are waiting and trusting and hoping.
Yeah, but now you've got that message. But the song sounds happy. It's got this awesome beat. It's very memorable and everything. But you're using it to say such a deep message.
Well, I think that's the power of this type of music that 363 embraces. Rock and roll is a vibrant, urgent kind of music. It's not gentle like folk. It's not R&B smooth. There's something urgent about rock and roll, guitar, bass, and drums that I've always drawn myself to and always been drawn to. And when you marry a message of urgency and frustrated waiting, hopeful waiting with the sound of those guitars and drums, I think it's very potent. So that's why 363 sounds the way it does and why this particular song sounds the way it does.
Well, we love it. So we're going to follow you. We want to follow you. If we want to follow you, where do we do so?
The usual social media things, which did not exist when 363 started and now everywhere. Instagram, Facebook, 363, at 363, all over the place. TikTok, you can find this everywhere.
We've been talking about this song. You're updated with John Ellis. Let's listen to it. How much longer?